Crosby, Stills, and Nash. And for what it's worth. And what is it worth? I'm Paul DiRienzo, and welcome back. You're listening to WBAI New York. A wave of pro-Palestinian protests spread and intensified over the week as students gathered on campuses around the country and in some cases facing off police. University administrators from Texas to California moved to clear protesters and prevent encampments from taking hold on their own campuses, as they have at Columbia University, deploying police, intense new confrontations that already have led to dozens of arrests. New protests continued erupting in places like Pittsburgh and San Antonio. Students expressed solidarity with their fellow students at Columbia and with a pro-Palestinian movement that appeared to be galvanized by what happened at Columbia over the last few days, and NYU as well. The demands include at Columbia and other schools, divestment by their universities from companies connected to the Israeli military campaign in Gaza, disclosure of those and other investments, and a recognition of the continuing right to protest without punishment. I was just reading that. I don't want to call it an Israeli military campaign in Gaza, right? Isn't it a genocide? Why don't they can cut down the number of words they use. The demonstration spread overseas as well, with students on campuses in Cairo, Paris, and Sydney, Australia, gathering to voice support for Palestinian and oppose the war. So yesterday, I was at Columbia University and was able to get in for the first time. Reporters have been kept off campus since the original conflict. And calling it a conflict seems a real stretch of the imagination, because, in fact, what happened was some very sweet, nice, and concerned students, concerned about what was happening in Gaza and genocide, concerned about the developments in American politics, in supporting Israel and Israel's support of sort of the United States and Israel together, working to define an issue as one of hostages, when in fact it's one of captives in Gaza, held prisoner in Gaza for since 1948, and not allowed to express themselves and become a nation, and as the United Nations has said they should be, you know, nearly 80 years ago, and has not happened yet. In fact, what we see now is a genocidal attack on Gaza, this sort of last ditch attempt to destroy the Palestinians and their dreams for a state once and for all, with the United States, whatever they say out of one side of their mouth, are totally backing with armaments, $95 billion for Israel, Ukraine, and Taiwan just in the last few days, are opening three fronts in a war and a crackdown on students. And I like to say this, there was a lot of criticism of the crackdowns on protesters in Moscow and St. Petersburg and other places across Russia. As soon as people came out to protest the Ukraine war, they were brutally broken up there, and very brave Russian protesters. So however you stand on the war, it was brave, right? And I hope you stand with peace, you know, as the end of the war, and not taking one side or another, but, you know, disarmament would be the future with these nuclear armed nations. But let's say, you know, we come to the United States, supposed to be better than that. And as a friend of mine from Japan said yesterday, a photojournalist has traveled the whole world and seen it all many times over. As far as he's concerned, the United States is pretty much the same as Russia, the way they treat demonstrations when it comes to things like that. It might be different in other areas of life, but when it comes to a protest against a war that the U.S. is supporting, they're pretty much the same as Russia, unfortunately. And we're discovering that. Anyway, that said, I sighed. Men aren't supposed to sigh, I read somewhere, but I don't sigh just because I don't breathe. I sigh because I do feel emotional connection to these people who are suffering, and I hope you do as well. I know you do because you're WBAI listeners. Yesterday, I was at Columbia University, got there on campus. I should say earlier, I had been at New York University and at NYU, was there at when police very brutally attacked protesters, peaceful protesters who were gathered on a sidewalk. You know, they had spilled over onto the street only because there were so many of them, you know, hundreds and hundreds of protesters. They were kept from a plaza in front of the Stern School of Business. People somehow got onto that plaza and put up tents similar to the ones at, the mayor said it was very unusual that they looked the same. And a sentiment that I heard echoed by Rudy Giuliani on his podcast. He seemed to have been out there whipping up the flames of this conflict on his podcast yesterday. And 120 people were arrested at night there, and a frightening arrest after a denunciation earlier that day or the night, day before, by Mayor Giuliani on Tuesday. Mayor Giuliani had is pretty much thrown his lot in with the police and with those forces that want to shut down these protests, without a doubt. And he's right there in the same company as Giuliani and Trump and the rest of them, and on this issue anyway. And then I heard that they were going to open up the campus to members of the media. So I was able to get in there yesterday, 2 in the afternoon, and spend some time on Columbia University talking to some of the students. I mean, it's a difficult situation. It's a tense situation. And just at that time, Mike Johnson, the Speaker of the House, showed up together with Maliotakis and some other Congress people who were basically calling for brutal stamping out of this protest as if it was some violent anti-Semitic protest. And you sit around and stand around, and it's like these beautiful, wonderful children who are expressing themselves against the way children and young people should express themselves, you know, especially when they're in college. That's the purpose of it. But they're getting the treatment, you know, and we all know what that is. That's older time. We remember, right? It's the same kind of thing. Worse, even, I think, in some ways. So let's go to this news conference, at least some clips from the news conference yesterday that the students had at their tent city in Columbia University. By the way, they have a 48-hour notice that the police are going to be allowed in to rip down their tents. We'll talk more about that in a minute. And that runs out 3 in the morning on Friday, I was told. 3 in the morning on Friday, they're expecting to move in. That's usually the NYPD style, right? To come at 3, 4 in the morning and to evict an encampment or whatever they want to do. So they expect nobody will be there, but we never sleep, right? We never sleep. The black cat of the IWW, Industrial Workers of the World. We never sleep. So here's the Columbia News Conference from yesterday.
Today marks 1 week since our first encampment on the South Lawn, which was brutally dismantled by NYPD at the direction of Columbia University after approximately 34 hours. Our demands are the same. Divest, disclose, and amnesty for all. And our community is stronger than ever. News that the university threatened to call the NYPD and the National Guard on peaceful protesters began to circulate late last night on social media. Shortly after, at 9:41 p.m. last night, University President Manu Shafiq sent an email to the Columbia community announcing a midnight deadline for negotiations, writing that she will, quote, have to consider alternative options for clearing the West Lawn, end quote, if the negotiations aren't successful. In threatening us, the university is negotiating in bad faith. At 4 a.m. this morning, Columbia University issued a written commitment to engage in further negotiations for at least 48 hours. This is a win for us. Our negotiation team has committed not to participate in a bargaining process so long as the university attempts to extract concessions by police or military force. After forcing students, the majority of whom are Palestinian, Black, Brown, and Jewish students from marginalized backgrounds to wait in the cold overnight to find out if they would be attacked and arrested by the NYPD or National Guard, early this morning, we won the concession that the university will not call law enforcement on our peaceful protest. Negotiations are now able to proceed, although on unstable ground. While we have received written assurances that our encampment will continue, the university continues to make threats in its attempt to stifle students' political speech. It should alarm everyone that a university that has claimed for years to respect and uphold freedom of speech and protest, a democratic principle this country loves and defends, has abandoned that norm and seeks to use police and military violence to crush our peaceful demonstration.
Shame.
These threats are anti-democratic and deplorable and antithetical to the principle of good faith negotiations. Columbia University has once again cemented itself in history as a repressive institution that serves politicians and donors before anyone else. We expect the university to stop its fear-mongering tactics and join our student negotiators in good faith. We want to thank students who showed up peacefully late last night and early this morning for their continued support and for sacrificing their physical and mental well-being in the face of police and military threats. The world, and we know that we are on, the history of this country and our world has shown us that young people, students, lead the charge for a more just world, and we know that we are on the right side of history. James Baldwin, civil rights activist, author, and someone that is taught here at length at Columbia University, has always said that education happens outside of the classroom and that the youth can only change society if they are allowed to critique it. And that is how we build our critical consciousness and work towards a just society. Thank you.
Damn right.
I understand there are some Jewish students who were arrested alongside you guys, but in talking with students on campus, they have expressed concerns about their safety. I mean, can you talk to that? If you could have a conversation with the people, the Jewish students on campus who say they fear for their safety, what would you want to say to them?
Go ahead.
Listen to our demands. We are advocating for life. We're advocating for an end to massacre. We're advocating for a future where people are liberated and have full equal human rights. This is something that is mutually beneficial to everyone, and ultimately acting out of love, care, and a desire to see, a hope to see a future that involves all of our collective liberation.
And what I will also say in response to that is what I've been saying to other people is that I think it's important to distinguish between feeling unsafe and feeling uncomfortable. Those two are not always the same thing.
I find this distinction highly problematic that you're making between students and community members.
Can you clarify the distinction?
Yes, so this ties to Columbia University's complicity in ethnic cleansing in Harlem against the black and brown communities, where they attempt to expand all the way from 116th to 180th, where donors have made their investments in the Manhattanville Project contingent on the building of a Columbia University facility in occupied Palestine in Tel Aviv, where Palestinian students themselves would not be able to attend this university given the apartheid of the occupation of Palestine.
Columbia is an open campus. I mean, the past week or so, it hasn't been for reasons that the university has made public, but this is an open campus.
Who has been, of the forces that have been here for the last week, the biggest threat to the safety of students at Columbia?
Columbia University is the biggest threat to student safety as they kill their own students' family members in Palestine and make billions off of this.
And that was some clips from yesterday's expansive news conference at Columbia University by students who were involved in the occupation of the West Lawn of the central part of the campus of Columbia University, where numerous tents, I couldn't count them all, but there were dozens of large tents were there. I found it interesting that Mayor Giuliani, which I've heard echoed by Mayor Adams, who I've heard echoed by Rudy Giuliani, was claiming that these tents all look the same, were all the same color, which is since I don't think they were there. Giuliani said he was there. Giuliani was at NYU, actually, a few days earlier, he claims, and he was wearing a disguise, he claimed, but he said, of course, they all recognized me and started booing me. The other folks to get involved was Mike Johnson, the House Speaker who visited Columbia. And well, it says here there's 80 tents, dozens, I said, there's 80 tents. Somebody actually took the time to count them. Johnson has been calling for the school's president, President Shafiq, Shafiq, they call her, should resign. He called on her to resign. If she could not immediately get the situation under control, you have to understand the House Education Committee, which is a right-wing Republican sort of UAC type of House Un-American Activities Committee, sort of doing its own little witch hunt of colleges, universities across the country, was behind, you know, one of the forces behind stirring this up. And Representative Fox is chair of that committee, is extremely conservative. And they had people who were actually members of the House who were actually questioning President Shafiq over whether or not she understood she was these protests were a curse upon God, according to the Old Testament, confirmed in the New Testament. And it was interesting to see this representative, this college president, who's a representative of the Enlightenment, Columbia University, one of the top Ivy League universities, a university founded in the height of the Enlightenment and supposed to reflect the ideas of the Enlightenment, being so easily cowed by this type of religious fanaticism that the Enlightenment was supposed to have shooed away forever, which seems to be all that powerful in the United States. So we can't even determine in this country, we cannot even be sure that the ideals of the Enlightenment of France and the changes that came that made the world a better place hundreds of years ago are safe in our country, which is sad. The next song, Oh Palestine, by an Irish singer, Seth Staten Watkins. And I love this song. I hope people love it, and I hope some people are disturbed by it. This is a great song. Go for it.
Oh Palestine, your people live in fear. We demand your emancipation from the river to the sea. We stand with your emancipation, your people will be free.
Seth Staten Watkins. What a great song. I love it. I just came across that song randomly a week ago, and I just haven't got enough of listening to it. It's my honor to be able to play it here for you on WBAI. I'm Paul DiRienzo, and this is What's Going On. And Philippe is usually here, but he'll be back next week. And we're doing a special program about the events on the college campuses. One of many. We've been doing a lot of programming on this all over WBAI. I've been doing a lot of programming on it. We're going to continue doing this kind of programming as long as there is a WBAI. We're going to go to another clip now. This is an interview I did with Nancy, a student, a graduate student at Columbia University. And it's a few minutes long, and she tells us the reasons why she was there on campus protesting on behalf of the people of Gaza and the Palestinian people.
My name is Nancy.
Student here?
Yes, I am a student here.
What year? What?
I'm currently in a master's program. I'm getting a degree in mental health counseling.
When did you get involved with the Free Palestine movement?
I've been involved since high school, I think, honestly. I just graduated from Yale University, and there I was very involved with Yalies for Palestine throughout the 4 years I was there. Back then, it's not an organization that is funded or recognized by Yale University. We always had to like raise money on our own through our art and a lot of hard work. Like we would embroider bags and sell them. It was just always very under the radar and something that we had to fight for media attention for. So it's amazing to see this much attention being brought to it right here through Columbia.
Speaking about the attention, and you don't have to speak directly to what he said. I don't even know what he said, but the Speaker of the House of Representatives made it all the way up here, a very conservative man. So,
yeah.
And I've heard what the governor had to say today, and I heard yesterday what the mayor had to say on Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
It's harsh. Harsh statements about you guys. You're like the devil to these folks. What do you have to say to all of that?
I think it's almost absurd hearing what they have to say to us, because if you actually set foot on the encampment, all you're going to feel is love. I think truly, like, I've never felt or experienced community to such an incredible extent. With the genocide of over 40,000 people, like, going to school has just felt like insane and very out of touch, you know? Like, it feels like we're not attending to the parts of ourselves that are the most human. It was so hard to find faculty and also classmates who were feeling the same way as I was. But being here on this encampment, everyone putting everything aside to serve this higher purpose that I know will go down in history as, like, a very important thing that, like, institutions will try to align themselves with. When looking back, it's incredible. It feels a little surreal in the moment, especially as mental health counselors, just talking to people in the encampment. There's a lot of different emotions, conflicting emotions. But yeah, all in all, it's been such an incredible experience, and I wouldn't give it up for anything.
It must be a little bit fearful. I mean, 108 arrests and then the university going hog wild. I mean, throwing people out of school for trespassing and things like
definitely.
That.
Definitely. And it's so ridiculous the way it's so hard to access campus. Like, I remember there was one day where there was only one entrance that was open, and it was barricaded by police in riot gear. They were in riot gear, and it was just, it's like, are we even students here? Like, why is it so difficult for us to access our own campus without being brutalized or interrogated or stopped at the entrance and ID'd?
What was the most frightening part of this whole experience for you?
I think watching my friends get arrested the first time was really frightening, because I'm an international student. I've only seen, like, footage of police brutality, so much footage of police brutality, as, like, I think in most places of the world, I think they know the U.S. for its military and police violence. And just thinking of what we were doing, which is just, like, camping and sharing ideas and being in community and just being in a place that is designated for student protests on our own campus, and thinking of, like, forcible removal of people. 400, at least 500 students have been just working day and night to keep safe and feed and clothe and keep dry. It was just heartbreaking. Yeah, and I think, yes, of course there is fear, but the first arrests inspired, you know, encampments all over the country. And more than that, I think there are more than double the amount of students from last time who have said that they are willing to get arrested again if it comes to it.
Mentioning the National Guard, in my day, we had a place called Kent State. I'm really good friends with somebody whose sister was killed at Kent State, so I understand the feeling that saying the words National Guard, and I don't want to frighten you or anything like that, but or imply that that's what's going to happen. I don't think so. And when they say National Guard, like they've been saying here, and you look at that history of the United States, I mean, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, the threat has been made. A congressperson has mentioned sending the National Guard. I feel like at this point, we know the risks, and we've been talking about it for months, for a whole semester. So I think we know the risk, but we also know what is at stake is much higher, which is people like to think they know what they would be doing when the Holocaust was happening, when other genocides were happening, and here we are in this moment. So it's not that we are, like, blissfully unaware of the risks. We are, and we're consulting many people about it, like lawyers, trusted people in faculty. We just think it's worth it.
And that was Nancy, a student at Columbia University, who I interviewed yesterday at the tent city. I call it a tent city because I'm used to, we called it a tent city at Tompkins Square Park. They call it an encampment. We have some callers on the line. We're going to open up the show to those callers. Our on-air number is 212-209-2877. I'm Paul D'Arienzo. This is WBAI New York, 212-209-2877. We're going to give a little musical bed and then give you a chance to get to those phones and dial us, 212-209-2877. Looking forward to your calls.
I've been waiting for something to happen, for a week or a month or a year, with the blood in the ink of the headlines and the sound of the crowd in my ear. You might ask what it takes to remember when you know that you've seen it before, where a government lies to a people and a country is drifting to war. There's a shadow on the faces of the men who sent the guns to the wars that are fought in places where their business interest runs. On the radio, talk shows, and the TV, you hear one thing again and again: how the USA stands for freedom, and we come to the aid of a friend. But who are the ones that we call our friends? These governments killing their own, or the people who find they can't take anymore, and they pick up a gun or a brick or a stone. And there are lives in the balance. There are people under fire. There are children at the camps. There is blood on the wire.
And welcome back to WBAI. I hope we have some calls on the line. Michael G. Haskins at the controls. Michael, do we have those calls ready to go? Nobody calling yet?
Hello. Good morning.
Yes. Oh, you're on the air. Very good. Thank you for joining us. Your questions or comments about the program?
Am I speaking right now? The person?
We're on the radio. As soon as you hear me, you're on the radio live.
Okay. I'm hearing a lot of background noise, like a lot of beeping and so on.
Well, who knows? That's probably on your phone. Go ahead.
All righty. Listen, I was just wondering, you know, with the canards that we heard at the beginning of the attack on October 7th about all the, you know, beheadings of babies and things of this nature, I just wanted to make you guys aware of something that's not being covered, that Mr. Johnson, Mike Johnson, the speaker, said on the steps of Columbia. He reported it. Jake Tapper interrupted his show to listen to what he was saying, made no comment about it. And then later on, Aaron Burnett had him for a 15-minute interview, and he made the same comments. And these comments are, number one, that what the students are doing is anti-Semitic. Why, she asked. She goes, if they're just asking for a free Palestine, how is that anti-Semitic? He goes, well, Hamas applauded them for what they're doing, so right there, that's anti-Semitic. And the other thing he said, which was outrageous, he said that, quote, that the students aren't aware, he said, quote, that Hamas took Israeli babies and cooked them alive in ovens, unquote.
He said they just made that up. All of this is made up. Caller, I'm sorry to jump in there, but Elise Stefanik, who is one of the loudest mouths of this whole attack, and who got who's on cloud nine because she got the presidents of Harvard and another top university fired, University of Pennsylvania fired over this kind of thing, is the chief architect of this whole thing within the Congress, who's been pushing it and who's become building a career on doing this, is famed for campaigning on anti-Semitic, open anti-Semitic canards. She's famed for it. These people, I'm going to look them all up, but I will tell you, I will put $10 down that every single one of them is a raging anti-Semite, not only in their private lives, which I could care less, but in their public campaigning in order to get votes based on anti-Semitism. Their entire careers.
Here's my problem, is that we know CNN is just radically pro-Israel. But when they allow comments, they were accused, number one, of taking basically dictation from the IDF regarding everything that happened, until finally they were brought to task about their actual comments. And you had, I forget what's his name, used to be with Democracy Now, now was with I'm an older gentleman.
Okay, well, let's just jump over. There's other calls coming. Let me go
all
back.
Right,
Thank you so much for bringing that up. The very important point you brought up, caller. Very good. And I saw that interview as well last night. Very good. Let's go. Next call. You're listening to WBAI. I'm Paul D'Arienzo. This is What's Going On. What's going on with you?
Yeah.
All right, question or comment? You're on the radio.
Yeah, thanks for going down there and doing some groundwork. That's the way to do it, actually.
Well, I got in. Was able to get in. Fortunately, it's hard to get in there. They're keeping the media out, and the students actually demanded that the media be allowed in.
Yeah. Why do the Semitics, let's say it that way, why do they get so like wrapped up in, like, if somebody says, well, you're Jewish and you own the store, or you are the majority on the school, and people point that out, and why do they get all bent out of shape?
Well, I think it's about that. That's the thing. I think that this whole fight is about whether you're part of, you know, America or not. You know, the American government determines whether or not you're an insider or an outsider, and it's one of the unpleasant and unfortunate side effects of a system of equality. In the past, we always had our people who are a credit, right? A credit to your race, a credit to your religion or your ethnicity, and then the mass of the unwashed ignorant of that group, you know? So you had the rich, educated Jewish banker, or you have the incredibly successful black person, and everybody else, you know, or the Italian person who gets elected to office, and everybody else is just this, oh, like horrible people. We wouldn't let them near our house. And then when democracy brought it all together, legalized being Jewish, legalized being an immigrant in the streets of America, legalized, you know, black people's freedoms and rights to be like everybody else. That's when you saw this sort of artificial creation of who's with us and who's against us.
Well, and they get bent out of shape if you, like, say, hey, I notice, I could see what's up, and you're trying to kind of have a conversation. Not everybody's screaming, I'll beat you down, and you're just trying to figure out how to make things better.
And you're hearing it from who? Elise Stefanik. Like, I mean, you're hearing it from Donald Trump. You're hearing it from crazy Rudy Giuliani, nuttier than a fruitcake on his, you know, saying this. But it's this somebody like that is actually in charge. And then Mayor Adams.
If you make a comment like, and this is no joke, this is real. When there's a Jewish holiday, there's half or three quarters of the traffic on the Cross Bronx doesn't exist. And even going downtown. And this is very easy to see because, unfortunately, major highways funnel down to like three lanes. And so you could actually see this happen 100% of the time. So if you make that comment, you're anti-Semitic?
I don't think so. I don't know to who you're
talking. No, I've seen that happen. All right, well, just another take.
Okay, thank you, Carl. It's all right.
You can't criticize.
I understand what you're saying. I don't think that that's the main issue here. The main issue here is whether or not you're supporting U.S. murderous intention in supplying arms to Israel to destroy these people. This is really what it's about. I feel sorry because Jewish people are often like getting the stick on this too, because, you know, I'll say it's controversial, but I think Israel is the worst thing that's ever happened to the Jewish people, and it's increased anti-Semitism more than ever. What do you think of that? Next caller, you're on the radio.
Hi.
Hello.
Good morning. How are you?
Yeah. Go ahead.
Hi.
Hi. Yeah. You're on the air.
I wanted to say that another outlet that we really, or you're doing such a fine job covering all of this, is CNBC. They have been the drumbeat for this narrative of violence on the campus and the Jewish students being unsafe, you know, when they were going after Claudine Gay and all of the heads of these of higher institutions. They had Bill Ackman, who's this investor, you know, who's been, and so that ties them to the business, you know, these rich donors who give to Columbia, to Harvard. They have been promoting this, and it's on the Business Channel. No one has looked at this, and I think you should take a look at it, because it's like on 3 hours a day. They give them all kinds of leeway, and the hosts, a lot of them Jewish, are taking to task anyone who comes on there who's black. They start asking them, what do you think about this radical free speech? Because it's like, you know, was associated with the black. All of this was turned on its head to take away the genocide that is being committed in Israel. Instead, they turned it into this, there's this protest on campuses, and it's unsafe for Jewish kids. And everybody has
that's
now
why
brought
Ron,
into it.
That's why Mike Johnson was there. I'm sorry to jump in. We're just limited in time, and I love what you said. That's why Mike Johnson was there. That's what the kids said. What I call the kids, these young people, these incredible young people who are doing what they're doing there in Columbia University, taking such risks with their lives and their careers. I mean, they could lose everything. They worked so hard to get to Columbia, and it could be wiped out in a second for a trespassing charge. And that's what they said. They refused to even acknowledge in their press conference that Mike Johnson was there. And the reason was, the whole thing is a Trumpian, Giuliani, Adams. I put them all in the same, my pillow guy. This is an attempt by them to stir up disputes where there weren't, in order to generate votes for Trump.
But linked with the Jews in Israel, with what they're doing, they put those two together. If you could maybe highlight that, because that's, of course, you know, it's like if you put the white supremacy with the with the Jewish, what they're doing in Israel and the genocide, it comes together and it just blows up, it mushrooms. And CNBC has been the drumbeat for this. You have got to cover them.
All right, I will. Thank you very much for that call. Yes. Let's move on to the next caller. You're on the radio.
Hey, all power to the people. All power to the people. Hey, Chairman Africa of the New Africa Black Panther Party in North New Jersey. Oh, hey, great. Man, I'm going to say something that's not popular. Hey, look, we don't have a free press. America is not a democracy, and the issues we are dealing with is imperialism. The problem is imperialism. Hey, you're marching and going to beg the architects of imperialism, begging the politicians that are getting paid by corporations to pass policies that benefit imperialists. That does nothing for the material conditions on the ground. We in North right now. People are being thrown out of their homes. There's gentrification all over North, New Jersey, New York, everywhere. Yo, what we do is go kick doors in and put people in their homes. The children can't read. We start after-school program and help them read. Yo, they're still dropping bombs on Gaza. There's nowhere in Gaza right now that's safe for anybody to be. All this protesting and begging these politicians to do something has done nothing to solve anything. People want to do something? Why? Everybody that's in New York, all the college students, everybody that's organizing the college students, you'll get on some planes and go to Gaza. That will solve the issue quicker than running to politicians and begging them while they're dropping bombs, passing policy, sending money across seas to go kill babies, women, children, men, everybody, wipe out a whole nation while we're sitting here outside of schools trying to protest. And now the conversation has changed from bombing people to for people to have the right to protest. You know, this is all a gimmick. If people want to change the conditions, you must come out your homes and get on the ground and deal with the people on the ground and help the people sustain themselves. Instead of going to beg these politicians, the school's official, none of that has never changed the condition. From Berkeley, when they were protesting in the Vietnam War, till now, nothing has changed in the United States of America. Those protests are distractions. I know it's not popular to say. I know people think they're risking their lives. They're risking their lives, getting sentences, getting locked up. That's not risking your life. Risking your life is catching a bullet. That's risking your life. Risking your life is all those people in New York, all around the country, all around the world that's protesting. Everybody put your money together and get on some planes and go to Gaza. Let them come kill everybody there. Then you change everything. But until we do that, you know, we're just talking because it makes us feel good. Tomorrow we're going to say we went down to Colombia and we protested down in Colombia. We fought down in Colombia. Yeah, we spoke up for the people in Gaza. No, you didn't. You just made yourself feel good. You feel good now. You feel like you did something. And tomorrow, those same Congress people that our tax dollars are paying are going to drop more bombs on those people. I know it's not a popular thing to say, but if you want to work with the people, you want to liberate the people, you got to put some skin in the game. You got to put your life on the line. And that's what we must do. And I'll be the first one to sign up to go to Gaza. Let's organize the people now. We have this platform. Let's organize the people. If you want to go save the people in Palestine, put your panties together. Let's fly out there and let's go stop Israel from bombing those people. That's what we should be telling people. Not go out to Colombia to go shout and yell so you can go get arrested and then you go home and they're still dropping bombs. All power to the people. I live for the people. I die for the people. Have a good day.
All power to the people, Chairman. Thank you very much for those comments. And, you know, it's interesting because when we were talking, you reminded me that almost any minute now, there's a flotilla of ships that are leaving from Istanbul, Turkey, to bring aid to Gaza, and that some very notable peace activists are involved in that from the United States. And we've interviewed some of those folks. And so there are people going to Gaza. They're not bringing bombs. They are bringing food. They're bringing 50,000 pounds of food. The Freedom Flotilla, it's called. And they're sailing. I'm looking right now for the time. They're discussing. They're about to announce exactly when the time is. But all these organizations are involved, including Code Pink and some of the folks who are we hear here on WBAI. So I'm looking at some of the participants here. A list. Let's see. Well, you know, we've had a few, and I'm trying to find the list right here of folks who are going. Hang on one second. Maybe it's under this. And here it goes. Getting the latest information. I have a beautiful ship. Intense nonviolence training, which is interesting. The nonviolence training to join the Freedom Flotilla's coalition ships to Gaza has been intense. Hundreds of us, this is Medea Benjamin writing, Code Pink is involved on it, as hundreds of us from 32 countries gathered in Istanbul, we were briefed about what we might encounter on this voyage. One trainer insisted we have to be ready for every possibility. The best scenario, they said, is for our three ships, one carrying 5,500 tons of humanitarian aid and two carrying the passengers, will reach Gaza and accomplish our mission. Another scenario would be that the Turkish government caves in from pressure from Israel and the United States and Germany to prevent the boats from even leaving Istanbul. Another possibility is that the ships take off, but the Israelis illegally hijack us in international waters, confiscate our boats and supplies, arrest and imprison us, and eventually deport us. That happened on several other voyages to Gaza. They boarded the biggest boat, the Mavi Marmara, remember that, in 2010. The Israelis opened fire with live rounds from a helicopter hovering above the ship and from commando boats along the side of the ship in a horrific display of force. So there are folks who are incredibly brave, nonviolent activists led by people you hear on WBAI like Medea Benjamin and others who are on their way or soon will be on their way to bring 5,500 tons, that's about 1 million pounds of supplies to Gaza. But will they make it? Will they make it? Will they be stopped at the border? Will they be stopped in the high seas and hijacked by pirates, by the Israeli military acting as pirates? Or will other even worse things occur? We don't know, and we're watching that. All right, next call. We have a couple more minutes, a couple more calls. Hope we can fit in. You're on the radio.
Hello.
Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you so much. I've actually been listening to WBAI for probably over 20 years. And I have to say that I've been very, very upset about the ongoing situation and what's going on in the region. I do want to say, though, that I think there is a misconception as to what anti-Semitism is. And I think, speaking as a Jewish person, there is a link where Jews have to the state of Israel. It is something that we pray, that we love, and a country that we hold very dear to us. And so we value Israel in a religious belief. As for the ongoing horrific war that's going on, when I see college students, activists, my question is it really a peaceful activism where they are advocating for coexistence and peace in the region? And if so, have these college students created a we-they scenario where some humans are valued more than other humans? And here in my community, there are one hostage from my community that is being held. And there is also a hostage that spoke last night. And I have to say, I am a big advocate for peace. And I do not at all advocate war whatsoever. But I do advocate for coexistence and treating humans in a respectful way and to value one human over the other, or to use the term Zionist in a derogatory way, is creating more division than it is coexistence. And my heart breaks for anyone and everyone in the region who's being affected. But I think for Americans to come together, we need to advocate for all people. all people.
We don't have much time. I just, before we run out, I just want to ask you this. The really briefly, we have to leave it. I'm sorry the tyranny of the clock has stepped in, but a threat versus being made uncomfortable, to feel truly violently threatened, is a lot different, don't you think, than being made to feel maybe a little bit uncomfortable to face certain things?
I think that what people may see, and as a Jew, I do feel threatened. I feel threatened in this country because after studying history, I do have to say I have a master's in history with the Arab-Israeli conflict, where one of the professors I worked with was one of the most objective professors who wanted peace on both sides. He was absolutely phenomenal in that respect. And after studying history and the history of anti-Semitism, which is a hatred specifically against the Jews, seeing the rise or the comments that are being made is not an uncomfortable situation. It is a threatening situation because the truth is, and it's not to insult anyone, I'm just really speaking honestly so people have an understanding and they don't have to believe or change their mind. That's not my point. I do have a connection and an ethnic origin to Israel. It is something that I, as a Jewish person, feel. And when I hear comments or when I see rallies where there is not one chant asking to bring hostages back or chanting to condemn a mass murder that happened in the South of peace activists.
Right.
But people who are peace activists, 26 Jewish students, we're running out of time.
I'm sorry. And I do want to, 26 Jewish activists were arrested at that encampment at Columbia. Everybody, thank you so much for your participation in this program. It was a wonderful opportunity to be here on WBAI, pushing the limits as usual. Again, I'm Paul DiRienzo. This has been What's Going On. Philippe will be back next week, and I'll be on the news. So thanks a lot for joining us.
There's a shadow on the faces of the men who fanned the flames of the wars that are fought in places where we can't even say the names. They sell us the president same way. They sell us our clothes and our cars.
WBAI New York. That's Paul DiRienzo sitting in for Felipe Luciano. Lives in the balance.